I thank, of course, the elders for allowing my presence. I wish I were better at this, but one day, with much practice, I'll get better. Daniel chapter 3. And I'll tell you a story first. I love to tell stories. Professional speakers call them icebreakers. Here's the icebreaker. Years ago, we bought a sailboat. Love sailing. I think I told you the story about the day I bought it, so I won't tell you that one again. But my father-in-law and mother-in-law came over to the house. We were living there in Pensacola, Florida. They came over to the house and they said, "Henry, are we going sailing this weekend?" I said, "Well, we try to go every weekend we can. You want to go?" "Sure." So we all loaded up the boat and lots of drinks and sandwiches and chips, because that's mostly what you do on board boats generally, is you just eat constantly, especially on a sailboat. You eat constantly because it's so low. You're going 6 knots. Come on. Translate to 8 miles an hour. And even though Pensacola Bay is not that big, it's, you know, 20 miles long. That's 3 hours. 3 hours. So you cross the bay, you come back, it's all day long. Well, it's relaxing. I love it. You don't hear a big loud motor. You don't. The sky is blue. Everything's great. Now, the bad part about sailboats is when the weather gets bad, don't plan on running. You ain't out running nothing. You're not. And sure enough, we got into some bad summertime squall. I mean, it was really, really bad. I kind of got the hint when the first wave broke over the deck, ran into the cockpit, started going into the main cabin. I told Becky and the kids, "I think it's time to go below deck." And my mother-in-law was already there. My father-in-law said, "Can I be of any help?" And I said, "I'm not sure." He was already on his way. They closed the hatch behind me, and I'm in the cockpit by myself. Well, the waves were breaking over the deck pretty bad, and I thought, fortunately, the jib was already down because I didn't have the equipment to lower the jib from the cockpit. I would have to walk up to the front of the bow to drop the jib sail. This was going to get interesting. So I thought, well, fortunately, the jib's already down and hanked. Let me put a reef point in the main. I put a reef point in the main, which means drop it about 30% and tie it off with square knots. And then I thought, well, oh man, what's next? Oh, let me put the motor in the water because I want to be able to control the boat. I don't want to possibly broach the boat. That is, catch the wave on the side and you go through what's called a knockdown. Your sails actually hit the water. I didn't really want that to happen. It'd be like taking the BBs that's in the coffee can and shaking them up. The boat won't sink, but it will right itself. It's got 3,500 pounds in the keel. A lot of details I know. Hang with me. Well, I began to notice with the motor running that every time we went over a wave, the waves were so large the motor came completely out of the water. I knew I was going to burn the engine up if it continued to turn air, not water. So I had to shut the engine off, and I thought, I got to hang through this because I got some precious cargo on board. The waves are getting bigger. They were 4 and 5 footers. Now they're 6 and 8 footers. And every once in a while, if you've ever been at sea very long, there's always a rogue wave. You don't know where it comes from. And that's always the one that goes over the deck and it wets you and it wets the deck and it wets everything. And it was just an interesting day. This whole ordeal lasted about 45 minutes, but I thought it lasted 4 or 5 days. It was really interesting. All of a sudden, you know how summertime squalls are. And I kept my sunglasses on just to keep the rain out of my eyes. It was raining that hard. The wind was blowing that bad. There was lightning, of course. I'm standing next to an aluminum mast. That's got to be fun. The whole thing was just, it really tested my seamanship. It tested my ability to, under strong gale winds, it was probably 45, 50 mile an hour winds, the Windbird wasn't doing real well at that time. It was blowing so hard at the top of the mast. So I had all that going on. I got this mainsail reefed. I got everything managed, and I was able to attack the waves, the 6 and 8 footers, at about a 45 degree angle, which is the safest you can do. It ain't safe, but it's the best you can do in a bad situation. When it was all over with and we got back to the dock, the kids thought it was a lot of fun. I don't think my mother-in-law was going to go with me again, but she probably would. My father-in-law was glad to be on the dock because he went straight to the dock and went straight to the bathroom. I don't know what happened in there, but something went on, I'm sure. And it was just a nice day on the board of the boat. But the one thing in retrospect, looking back on it, is the simple fact that calm seas do not make an experienced sailor. You will never be a good sailor if all you do is go out when it's fair weather. You'll never do it. You'll never become a pilot if all you take off in is blue skies, no clouds, light wind out of the south. You'll never be a pilot. I could have told you a piloting story. That's another story. But you'll never become a good pilot. Richard, will you become a good elder if you never have an aggravation or two? No. Will you become a decent Christian that can deal with problems if you never have any? What about a parent that never has a child and gives them a smart mouth? Do you see where I'm going? We are defined by our struggle, aren't we? Our mettle is tested. We are nothing until we've been tested. I would have never known that I could have handled 6 to 8 foot waves in a 23 foot sailboat. Let's see, 8 goes into 23 how many times? That's a big wave for that little boat. I would have never thought that I could handle 8 foot waves, occasionally a rogue a little bigger, in a 23 footer. It was not a full keel either. It was a partial keel with a lowerable keel. There's a lot of details here you'd probably like to hear about sometime. Let me know. But I'm here to tell you, that's not a boat I'd want to go out in that kind of weather. I wouldn't choose it. I wouldn't be at the dock and see that and say, I'm going out. But now I know. I can go out. I can survive. Could I handle 20 footers? I wouldn't want to. But you're defined by who and what and the circumstances in life. You're defined by them. In Isaiah, the 30th chapter, and though the Lord give you the bread of adversity, and the water of affliction, yet your teacher will not hide himself anymore. But your eyes shall see your teacher. Well, so what? Proverbs the 24th chapter and verse 10. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Folks, if you give up, you give up. You give up. Your strength is small. I wouldn't say you're nothing, but you haven't challenged yourself yet. You haven't pushed yourself. Whether it's organic chemistry for you younger ones that's fixing to go to college, or calculus, or biochemistry, or comparative vertebrate anatomy, or whatever you jump into, this real challenge in life. Or whether it's a mate in life that just doesn't think like you and you've got to try to stick it out for 60 or 70 years, or you're at a job that's challenging you, you're nothing till you stick it out. Your strength is small. In Ecclesiastes 7, in the day of prosperity, be joyful. And in the day of adversity, consider, and I'll show you this, consider this. God has made the one as well as the other. so the man may not find out anything that will be after him. I'm amazed a lot of times that people don't realize that their brand of suffering in life is any different than anybody else's. We all got mortgages. We all had car payments at one time or another in our lives, or multiple car payments at one time or another in our lives. We've all had aggravating children, aggravating parents, aggravating in-laws. So what's different? We've all had people we couldn't get along with. We didn't want to deal with them for any reason whatsoever. We've been bullied, teased, and aggravated. And what makes your brand of suffering any different than mine? Your strength. Your ability to endure. Your ability to endure. Things go wrong. Things are bad. So what? Your brand of suffering is no different from anybody else's. And it doesn't matter if we go back 2,000 years all the way to the Old Testament or we go last week. What's different? People are still people. They're still aggravating. They're still mean. Some are loving. Some are kind. Some are not. Right? So what makes your brand of adversity or your brand of suffering any better than anybody else's? What makes mine any better or any worse than anybody else's? Nothing. We're still in the same earth. We're still with the same number of people. That's what Ezekiel's trying to tell the children of Israel. Now, I hope you have Daniel 3 turned open. This is going to be lengthy, and I apologize for just reading on to you, but be patient with me. I appreciate your patience. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. The king of Nebuchadnezzar set together the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the province to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and of every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace." Therefore, as soon as all the people heard this sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever." They started off by buttering the bread properly. "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and of every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. And there were certain Jews whom you have appointed over affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter." Well, that's bold. "If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of the hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Let's stop there for just a second. I want you to understand something. Was this done in a vacuum? Do you think nobody else knew about this except the king and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? I don't think so. Other people see what's going on. Word's already out. They know what's going on. And when these guys decide that they will bow, that their decision in life is to bow down or die, Die is it. They ain't buying down. Dying is it. If that's what it means, that's what it means. It's a defining moment for them, isn't it? I don't know if they worked off of each other's, if one of the three was kind of like, the wimpy one that, I don't really want to. And the other two pushed him along, or if all three were the same, I don't know. Those details are left out. Probably unimportant, really. Because the reality is all three chose to die. They stuck together. They planned on dying. That ain't what happened, though, is it? You know the story. The people that threw them in died. They came out not even smelling of smoke. Not even smelling of fire. No hair was singed on their head. And people were influenced, weren't they? People were influenced, were strengthened and encouraged by the courage they displayed. See, it was a defining moment in their life. A defining moment. And it strengthened other people. In Acts the 9th chapter, turn with me if you will over there. Acts the 9th chapter. Conversion of Paul. Now, who was this Paul or Saul? Who was he? Oh, he was a rascal. He liked to go around having people killed. He believed that Jesus was not the Savior. He was not the Messiah. And he wanted to make sure that this rebellion or insurrection was stamped out once and for all. He got letters and was on his way to Damascus when what happened? Let's read over there. Chapter 9, verse 3. "Now as he went on his way, he approached Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven shone around him, and falling to the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, 'Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?' And he said, 'Who are you, Lord?' And he said, 'I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But rise and enter the city, and you will be told what you are to do.'" And later, as we see things happen in Paul's life, doesn't he have a defining moment? Doesn't he have a defining moment that he has to admit he is what? Wrong. 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 That this is the Messiah. That what he's been doing for persecuting wasn't helping, it was hurting. He ruined his own reputation amongst the Jews and ruined his reputation among Christians in this transformation. It was a defining moment in his life when he saw Jesus on that road to Damascus and heard those words, "I am Jesus." That was a defining moment in his life. And what did he have to admit immediately over those next 3 days while he sat around waiting on his baptism? He had to admit where he was in his life, who he was, where he was, and where is he going. He had to admit he was wrong. What a concept. It was a defining moment in his life. And did it affect other people? Well, let's see, what about Barnabas? Oh, man. How would you like to go visit him? Here's this guy who wants to kill Christians. You're supposed to go visit this guy? What about the other apostles? It affects all the people around you. When you go through a defining moment in your life, what I'm getting at is this. When you go through a defining moment in your life, it does affect the people around you. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, hopefully good, but it does affect the people around you. And how you react to that defining moment makes all the difference in the world. Turn your wheel over to Matthew, the 26th chapter. We'll begin. I'll have to kind of watch the brevity here because there's been an awful lot of verses, and if I'm not careful, I'll bore you to tears with just thousands and thousands of verses, and you'll walk out of here and not take anything home with you. But I want you to take home a couple of things. First of all, the adversity does define who you are. And I'm going to read these for Peter because they're very, very important. Look at verses 20. Pick up at verse 20. And I want you to understand, keep in mind the type of personality that Peter is. When it was evening, he reclined at the table with the 12. And as they were eating, he said, "Truly I say unto you, one of you will betray me." Now, can you imagine the uproar that started at the table? The little whisperings. One of us is going to do what? Wonder who it is. And as they were eating, he said, "Truly one of you will betray me." And they were very sorrowful and began to say to him one after another, "Is it I, Lord?" He answered, "He who has dipped his hand in the dish with me will betray me. The Son of Man goes as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would be better for that man if he had not been born." Judas, who would betray him, answered, "Is it I, Rabbi?" He said to him, "You have said so." Now, if I were Judas, and the Lord just said that to me, I'd like to think that my brain was still in gear, the clutch ain't been pushed in, the car ain't been towed totally out of gear, and I could actually think for a moment and go, uh-oh. That was a defining moment in his life, wasn't it? It's a defining moment in his life. And it defined the rest of it, by the way. We already know the story. Verse 26. Now as they were eating, Jesus took bread and afterward blessed it and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took a cup, and when he had finished, had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink of it, all of you. For this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink of it again, of this fruit of the vine, until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus said to them, "You will all fall away because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee." Peter answered him, "Though they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away." Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times. Peter said to him, "Even if I must die with you, I will not deny you." And all the disciples said the same. That's a defining moment in all their lives, isn't it? A defining moment. Not just the one earlier for Judas, but a defining moment for every one of them. Because something is about to happen in the next few verses that's going to do what? They're all going to be like sheep and they're going to break and run. Every one of them. But Peter gets defined even further a little bit later. Look over at verse 69. Peter really gets defined here. Now Peter was sitting outside the courtyard and a servant girl came up to him and said, "You also were with Jesus the Galilean." But he denied it before them all, saying, "I do not know what you mean." And when he went out to the entrance, another servant girl saw him. And she said to the bystanders, "This man was with Jesus of Nazareth." And again he denied it with an oath, "I do not know the man." After a little while, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, "Certainly you too are one of them, for your accent betrays you." Then he began to invoke a curse on himself and to swear, "I do not know the man." And immediately the rooster crowed. That's a defining moment, wasn't it? Can you imagine for just a moment how he felt? Because he remembered exactly what Jesus said. It's a defining moment. Every one of the disciples were tried. Would they break and run? Jesus knew. He knew their character. He knew their hearts. He knew what would happen. But would it be a defining moment that would make them something more than they are? Something more than they are. Folks, our lives are no different from theirs. Well, yeah, we have a few cell phones and we got a few cars and we got electricity and the lights come on. We don't have to go outside to go to the potty. But really and truly, we have the same things that they had. They're still bullies. They're still nice people. You know what I mean? People are still people. Nations still threaten other nations like they do today, like they did then. There's not that much that's really that big different. People are still people. And their brand of suffering is no different than our brand of suffering, really. But other people are strengthened by what we go through. I hope you can see that. Other people are strengthened. Did Peter help other people in his life? Was he truly a part of other people's salvation? Absolutely. Did he lead other people to Christ? Absolutely. Was he made better by these trials he was put under? Absolutely. What about the other disciples? Absolutely. Did they like it when they went through all this? No. No more than I did in that 8-foot wave crossing over the deck of the boat. No, I didn't like it. I began to wonder if the bilge pump can handle it. We go through things all the time. This church goes through things all the time. Ups, downs. That's life. There's nothing new under the sun. I've heard that somewhere before. There's nothing new under the sun. Things happen. So what? Can you endure? This lesson wasn't designed to invite people to come to Christ. This lesson was not designed for anything else except... So who are you? Well, I'm Henry. I used to be a sailor, used to be a pilot, and used to be a lot of things, including janitor and bus driver. Have I had some defining moments? Absolutely, I've had some defining moments in a lot of different ways. As an elder in 2011, I actually wrote my resignation, put it on my computer, and read it again last night just for the fun of it. I never gave it to nobody. To say the least, Bob, it was a bad day. Bob, it was a bad day. I'll share that with you. It was a bad day, Bob. But I didn't give anybody the letter. I'm not knocking anybody that does resign. Don't get me wrong. I don't mean that in any way, shape, fashion, or form. Please don't take it that way. I'm just telling you my story. I didn't turn that letter in. I can't tell you why I didn't. My heart said turn it in. My heart said quit. My brain said quit. I wish I could tell you why I didn't. I wish I could tell you that I was strong, that I had strength. No, I didn't. I did not. I wish I could tell you that I had something, I was smarter or better or faster than the other elders. Nope, that ain't it either. I wish I could say that. I just didn't. And I was a coward for not turning in the letter. I don't know. But I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I stuck it out, went through the hard parts, dealt with what had to be dealt with, and I could breathe that I did my job. And I didn't like it. But I'm better for it. Could I do it again tomorrow? I hope not. I hope not. Some of these things I don't like doing. That's not one of them. You'll be defined by who you are in your lifetime. Whether or not you finish college or finish high school, finish a marriage of 75 years with someone, finish raising your kids and you don't quit, because don't people do that today? Leave the kids with their spouse and run off and they, I'm tired of this. I don't need to deal with it no more. I'm tired. I see it all the time. You do too. Run off and leave your kids. Leave your dog in the car. Let it die in the heat. I see it all the time. Quitters. Quitters. But you're defined by your struggle, your character, your dignity, who you are. You're defined. Peter was, Paul was, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was, Daniel was. The list goes on. They had struggles. Life was not easy for them or us. But our life is about our struggle and how we deal with it. A lot of times it's not whether you sin, it's how you deal with it. Pick the rug up, sweep it underneath it, avoid it, don't deal with it. Like I said, this lesson wasn't designed for that. It was designed for helping you to, hopefully you take home with you, that every struggle you go through in your life, you ought to thank the Lord for it. Yeah, it's hard to do. Thank the Lord for the struggle. It's a defining moment. It'll make you stronger. It'll make you a better person. And lastly, the strength of others is involved. They're watching how you deal with it. Do you deal with it positively with an open mind? Do you deal with it with strength? Or do you cower away and, nope, I can't deal with this anymore? Like I said, this ain't a lesson for an invitation. It's just a lesson for reflection. Hopefully we take it away. In closing, 2 Corinthians 4, 8 through 10. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carried in the body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in who? In you. That's all I got. Did what I could. If there's anyone here that needs to become a Christian today, there's only one good time. Now. If there's anyone here that needs the prayers of the elders of the congregation for some terrible thing in their life, there's only one good time for that too. Now, as we stand and sing.